ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Presented by Zadok Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Brendan behind the glass. A Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You showed out, Houston. You went to the parade. You had a great time. You went there in volume. You went there in masses. Some of these reported numbers, Blankers, on how many people went to the parade, 2 million. I think what is the city of Houston population? I think it's like around 7.5 million. So that's over a quarter of the city. If we believe the reports, the 2 million people were at the parade. Let's start there. Do you believe that there were 2 million people at the parade in downtown Houston yesterday and we were a few blocks away?
No. So you're the numbers guy. So I do this more of the thinking man's process. If you had 1 million at the parade in 2017, you're telling me essentially you had 2 parades worth during this parade. Now, I was willing to go 1.5, and I said it on air yesterday. 2 million people? I know they elongated the parade route. They did things because they had so many issues with all the people congregating last time. Look, I'm not trying to, it's not a negative. I just think that's a little overinflation of numbers. That's like attendance at Rockets home games if you're going to tell me it's a sellout. I just don't think they had 2 million people.
I don't know how we would know.
That's true too.
Like we're kind
of
going
turnstile.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you just have a collection of people that are walking the streets of downtown Houston, which is a pretty big area. So, look, I don't know. Maybe I'm naive to believe some of these reports, but I would say this, like whatever the number was, whether it was 1.25, whether it was 1.5, whether it was 2 million people, you got to see Houston show their love to a team that they absolutely adore, right? Like there is no doubt that this city loves the Astros so much. Mm-hmm. Walking around on Halloween, everybody wearing Astros stuff. During the World Series, everybody wearing Astros stuff. Decor on the houses, flags hanging off, you know, the cars. Whether it was 2 million or it was 1.5 million at the parade, that's a lot of people in the city of Houston showing their love for the Houston Astros. I went over to the Chronicle today to pick up the little paper stuff, mm-hmm. and you had like 100 cars there. This is
really?
This is 3 days after the Astros won the World Series, and you have 100 cars, and they did it like Chick-fil-A at the Chronicle, where they have like 5 different lines, cash here, credit card here, like just, you know, it's a racket that they're doing at the Chronicle, by the way.
They did 3 separate covers, right, and each one of them's $4?
Yeah, no, $3.
Okay, I thought on the news they said $4.
Actually, it was $5 because I paid $17, but I bought today's edition for the extra $2. Okay. So $17 for... It was $15 for the three and then $2 for today. So $5 for every paper. And you had hundreds of cars. I went there at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, and there's hundreds of cars.
That's amazing.
Like, it's a Chick-fil-A during lunch. Like, the love that this city has for the Houston Astros has quite honestly blown me away. Like, I have been blown away with the support that this city has given to the Houston Astros.
You know, having worked for the Rockets during the championships and at other times when the Rockets were good, it seemed like we always knew, and there were people I worked with that just refused to believe that it was still a football town. And then the discussions came to the point of, will they ever have anything that surpasses it being a football town? Now I think with the Astros, it's a real discussion, and I think that a lot of people believe this is a baseball town. They believe that the way this team has continued to win over this 6-year span, the 2 World Series, the 4 World Series appearances where they, you know, in 6 years, the 6 straight American League Championship Series appearances, the winning has gotten to be so much for so many that it started to win them over in terms of their overall allegiance if they had to pick a sport. It's amazing. The turnout was fantastic. The aerial shots yesterday about just the swarms and masses of people all over every bit of downtown. Look, we're broadcasting from Cobos Q. We're a good, 6-8 blocks off of the parade route minimum, including going under a freeway.
Yeah.
And it was a constant stream of traffic all day while we were there. It was amazing.
This is like always the age-old question, especially for what we do. Like, if you're just a fan in the city of Houston, and you're a sports fan in the city of Houston, you pull for the Texans, let's say. You pull for the Astros. You pull for the Rockets. You love them all equally. It just depends, like, what's in season, right? Like, I always joke around with people, and people ask me, what's your favorite sport? Well, whichever one's in season. I love sports like I love my kids. I don't have a favorite, right? Like, that's the easy answer to give. So if you're that guy where you just love all the sports the same across the board in the city of Houston, like, it's just okay, absorb whatever you're watching that day or whatever season it is or whoever's winning. But for like us, there's kind of like metrics involved, right? Like, okay, if 75% of the city wants to listen to the Texans right now or Texans talk right now, we should probably talk a little bit Texans. If 75% of the city wants to listen to Astros, let's talk about the Astros. And it's a very delicate balance, I think. But we're in the middle of an NFL season, right? I know the Texans stink right now. They're awful. I think that there's more desire to hear about what the Astros might be doing in the offseason than there is if Brandon Cook's going to play on Sunday or how the Texans look against the Giants, which I think has kind of flipped it on its head from where it was 7 years ago, right? Maybe before this golden era of Houston Astro baseball. We were talking to Greg Frank, who's over on the Sports Map side before the show, and we had the conversation, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago about what is the biggest sport in this city? And it might be football. But the Astros have more fan interest and have more desire to be talked about, or people crave the information on the Astros or talk about the Astros more than they do the Texans. At what point have we been more interested to hear about could the Astros bring Michael Brantley back than we have about the NFL team in this city? It's kind of turned on its head, I think.
Yeah, it really has. And I think that, you know what I really like about the passionate of the fans is that they take it personally to be called the football town with the success of this baseball team, to where they start letting you know to the point you were making about how we do the show, even about, hey, we're a baseball town. This is our team. Let's talk about the team that's relevant right now, that's winning at this unbelievable clip and doing things that we haven't seen before. And they want to make sure that we know that that's what they want to talk about because that's what they're passionate about. And I love that. I mean, look, I understand that you could be a big football fan, but I also understand if it's tough to swallow what the Texans have done over the last several years, and the fact that in the middle of a rebuild, some people still have finding it tough to get on board. But the fact that they show their passion now and they're not afraid to be outward about the fact that I'm a baseball fan and this is my team and I love what's going on right now. Let's talk about it. That's great in my book.
I don't think our Twitch is like our sample. Would you agree with that? Would y'all agree that our Twitch are like maniacs? They're all lunatics. They're all crazy. We love our maniacs. We love our lunatics. We love our crazies. Some of them.
I think they're passionate and they're a massive barometer for what they think is going on.
What they think.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they're a sample of the city.
I strategically
right?
worded my words there, Jeremy.
But I don't think it's the.
But
they're
I think for us though to take the cross sample of Twitch, text, Twitter, calls, and you can feel a vibe. You can feel an overall, like the fact that our we get calls periodically. The fact that when the Astros were finishing off this run this year and doing the things that they did, we could not find open lines sometimes. The calls just kept coming in and everybody wanted to talk about that. And like you said, that's in the middle of a football season. And I don't think that happens if the Texans are winning games. But I also think it's also about the sustained run the Astros have been on.
Absolutely. The sustained run matters because sometimes fans in cities, not saying the Houston's this way, it can be kind of a slow-moving ship where it takes a long time for you to completely dive in. That's not necessarily the case with the Astros. I'm speaking more generally speaking. But we had the question even whenever we're sitting there in the production room and having our little pregame warm-up where we start playing a little bit of soft toss. If the Texans won a Super Bowl, what is the attendance of that parade? Is it greater? Is it less? Is it equal to? I'm of the belief it's probably equal to. I don't think it's greater. I don't really think it's less. I think it's the same.
I do too, but that's an insane level for baseball to reach in any city. Like, it's one thing to say that the Astros, while being World Series champions, and the Texans, while being first pick, the number one pick as of right now. It's one thing to say that the Astros, at their best, are equal to the Texans at their worst. It's another to say the Astros at their best are equal to the Texans at their best. There are many cities in the country where I think you could say that about the baseball team and the football team.
Nationally, from a national perspective, NFL is far greater than Major League Baseball. There's no doubt about that. Go look at the ratings. Look at the TV deals. NFL is like the highest rated TV show. Like of the top 50, the NFL is like 35 of the top 50. NFL gets more eyeballs than any other sport. So like to Brendan's point, if the Major League Baseball team in a city is catching up the NFL team in the city, that gives you a pretty good idea of what the interest is.
That's where I was going to go to next, was the fact that the end-all, be-all in most barometers for a lot of people is the almighty dollar and as it translates to advertising and to network ratings. When you look at the ratings, no one would have said a Philadelphia-Houston World Series was going to compete with the NFL, was going to compete with some of the better World Series ratings of the last 3-4 years. The fact that it did and the fact that it was consistent and the fact that there was interest – lets you believe that it's more than just the way the games were going, and it has something to do with whether you're against them or for them. The Astros have a lot of eyeballs on them now as one of the premier teams in baseball.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch. Join the lunatics. Join the maniacs. Join the crazies. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. The Astros, baseball city, right? 2 million at the parade, hundreds of people getting chronic the paper just so they could have the headlines. 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
See, 2-3-4-1, we're just carrying over basically a conversation we were having before the show. Like, I think Brendan summed this up really well a couple weeks ago when we were talking about it, that Houston, if you're just talking about it from a sport perspective, probably more of a football city than a baseball city, but from a team perspective, more of an Astro city than a Texan city.
Can I tell you what I've thought going through this process? Because honestly, like, it's been really cool to me as somebody who loves to do what we do to get to, you know, be work in radio in a city that won the World Series. And something that's so cool about it is it has a bringing people together feeling that sports in general can have.
Yeah.
But the Astros probably have it stronger. Like, I sense it stronger with the Astros than I have with any team in a really long time.
I think part of it's what they went through. I really do. Being dragged by the national media, I think it kind of represents, like, the city. We're like, okay, people in Houston feel like they have to work harder to get what they want. Like, you know, compare it to, like, a Dallas or an L.A., stuff like that, where it's more of a pizzazz city, more of a Hollywood type of city. Houston's known to be a little bit more blue-collar, right? And that the Astros got dragged by a lot of people nationally, I think kind of fires up the Houston fan base even a little bit more. Like, there would still be tons of Astro fans. But having to go through that, I think, like, brought everybody together more than what it would have been, slightly. I mean, everybody would have still been on board. But because of that, all of a sudden, this Houston versus the world type of thing, Astros versus the rest of the world, I think it galvanized the fan base more than it would have been.
No, I think you're right. And I think that a lot of the eyeballs were curious to see how it was going to unfold because a lot of them wanted to see him fail. And they also wanted to see, you know, people go to Twitter after games just to see the Twitter fights between, you know, the Astros Nation that will stand up and fight for their team no matter what, and the ridiculousness of the teams that they beat and their fan bases just, you know, grasping at straws to try and take flailing haymakers on the way down before they get counted out.
A lot of times, too, Twitter, especially Astro Twitter, could be a little bit cannibalistic. Where they get their own. I had a few people coming at me after they won the World Series and, like, bashing me for a dusty take I had, like, in July. They, like, quote tweeted to, like, some dusty take I had in July, and they were like, oh, look at you, you idiot. And I'm like, well, that's a cool way to celebrate a championship. I've been on dusty for 2 months. So I find it funny. But like,
those are the people that need to find a hobby. When you're psychotic enough to take something that you took, like, that you said, like, 6-8 months ago, and you save it, you translate it, you bring it back numerous times, like, go take up crochet.
I thought it was kind of
something different. There's, like, a Michaels down the street.
I think it's ridiculous, but I did find it kind of funny, too. I'm like, okay, man, you just won a championship. This is what you're doing on a day that your favorite team wins a championship.
But you're right, though, because I saw a lot of Astros Twitter that started saying, pulling out my drawer full of receipts, getting ready to take, you know, to get my revenge shots.
They were
all loaded up and ready to go.
Yeah, one guy was like, you should delete this. I was like, I'm not going to delete this. I'm just going to put it out there and say that I was wrong. And that's the way it's going to be. And we're all very happy because the Astros win the World Series.
But again, to also clarify, we weren't wrong in the things that we were analyzing about Dusty Baker in the regular season. But we were also fair enough to say the things we didn't want to see in the playoffs, we didn't see in the playoffs. And he managed the team to almost perfection in the playoffs.
I think there's one spot where maybe as a show we could consider admitting we were wrong.
Jeremy said he wanted him fired, or I mean, fired, he wanted him gone at the end of the year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think everybody kind of wanted him to retire at the end of the year. I think people still think that, although I don't. I do a lot of self-reflection, like whether it's show, whether it's play-by-play, whether it's as a human being. Mm-hmm. And the biggest, like, takeaway that I've had with my criticism of Dusty and then how it all played out and then eventually Dusty coming back is I put way too much inventory and way too much stock in a mid-July game. Like, that's it didn't matter over the course of the Astros winning, like, the division by 25 games and then setting it up nicely for the postseason. I think it's tough to do that, though, have the big-picture approach whenever we're doing a three-hour radio show every single day.
Yep.
But if, like, when we're talking next July and the Astros are up by 10 games, rest the whole team, I'm not going to care.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I'm with you. I mean, in all my years and doing this and doing with teams, I try to look in the mirror first. And I try to say, where did I go wrong? And I'll blame myself first. But when you look at it and say, the one thing that I always have believed in, and it goes back even from LeBron and different examples in sports, I never believed in teams that believed they could flip the switch at any time, just turn it on when they needed to, and win a championship. So a lot of what Dusty was doing was, as I mentioned the other day, was the baseball version of load management. And I didn't think that that was going to be successful, and I didn't think it was the smartest thing to do. But the way it all played out and the fact that they didn't have significant injuries with the exception of Brantley, and the guys that he played well, and they did the things that they did and were successful, I have a hard time now saying it doesn't work. You can't do that. And you're right. I put too much stock in resting a guy that's got back-to-back home run days that is really starting to find his swing and sitting him down a day before he was going to sit down anyway. And maybe I won't be as critical next year about that. But the other thing, Jeremy,
a lot of people, I mean, that's baseball, though. Like, baseball, there's dudes that have days off.
Sure, but days off before days off, when you know that there's a day off coming that's built into the schedule, sometimes it's frustrating. Or a guy breaking out of a slump, the last thing the guy wants to do is sit down. But I think that the other thing that the listeners have to understand is, too, because they had their receipts ready to go, is the fact, and they do this on a daily and weekly basis, we make over 200 takes a week. We're not going to go 200-0. We're not going to be undefeated. We're going to miss.
Yeah, I just tell you what I think in the moment, and I couldn't care less if I'm right or wrong.
The same way we don't expect you to pat us on the back and you know, kudos over and over again if we get them right, we're going to miss on some, too. Look, Kyle Tucker's the one that I'll never outlive in terms of me being critical of him when it took 4 years to really find a groove and start. But I said what I said, and you know what? I'm really happy that he's found his groove.
2 million people at the parade, apparently. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Bizzle said, this is a football state, but any sports team with Houston on their chest will have our support. Houston versus everybody, Astros, Texans, Rockets. One thing I was thinking about, too, like the Astros, I think that a fandom to a team is kind of like a relationship. The Astros have built trust with the city to where you can believe in them being good. You can believe in them winning a championship every now and then. Have won two in the last 6 years. So, like, the fandom of Astros in the city, Jim Crane and that organization has built the trust within the fan base, right? So it's very easy whenever you have a high level of trust to love that franchise, love that relationship. The Texans are the exact polar opposite. The Texans have done nothing to build the trust, to build the relationship. In fact, they've alienated the fan base often. Whether it was Deshaun Watson demanding a trade before we knew the sexual misconduct stuff, mm-hmm. the Jack Easterby effect. Like, if Cal McNair would have fired Jack Easterby when everybody wanted Cal McNair to fire Jack Easterby, I don't think that there would be as much disdain over the Texans that there is now, even if the Texans were losing the same amount of games. The losing matters as well, because if the Texans were 13-4 last year and they were winning and Jack Easterby was still employed, it's easy to forget about Jack Easterby. But there is zero trust from the fans fan base to the Texans, whereas the Astros are the exact opposite end of the spectrum, where there is a huge amount of trust, maybe the most you could possibly trust a sports organization with the Houston Astros.
Yeah, no, I think you make a really, really good point. I think that there is such a religious love of football in this city, and with the Texans, there was still that continuous hope of it's good, it's going to get better. And I think that Easterby and O'Brien put this unbelievable taint and stain on what was that love and that almost like religious following of the Texans. And it pushed a lot of people away. And trying to get them back, you saw them at the start act holier than thou and say, we don't have to change a thing because we're the Texans and we're always going to have fans. We're always going to have a waiting list. We're always going to have people that are clamoring for our product no matter what we do, who we hire, and how we run our business. And then they realized they had to change their ways or they were going to lose even more.
Yeah. They've tried, but still, I mean, it's so far gone that it's tough. Yes.
Well, so you say it's so far gone. How quickly will it come back if the Texans get a top pick and get their quarterback?
I think pretty fast.
Because
I really do.
Getting a rookie quarterback changes the entire dynamic. I mean,
he's got to be good too.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Oh, absolutely not. Let's just say it's Bryce Young, because I'm back on the Bryce Young train. Let's just assume it's Bryce Young, and then Bryce Young looks absolutely awful, overmatched, and looks like a bust.
By when?
I mean, game 14. I don't know.
I think deep into year two, sure. I think people are going to give a rookie quarterback a full year and then some.
That's probably I tend to agree with that.
So, like, I don't think he has to look good in year one.
Here's the thing. We talk about, because we dig deeper than most in terms of seeing the talent that they drafted this year, being excited about that talent, understanding that they've got a lot of foundational pieces now to build around. But to the common fan, it's not that big, sexy pick that you draft that everybody's going to be watching. When you get that quarterback, now everybody's going to refocus. Now everybody's going to think, now we're on our way. And they're going to have a little bit more special interest. They're going to jump back on the bandwagon. They're going to believe this is the true start of an ascension up again.
Yeah.
And they're going to pay more attention.
I feel like the bandwagon, though, to like become very highly trafficked, it's going to take that rookie quarterback being pretty good. Like, I think the excitement's going to be there. Okay, we get to watch a Bryce Young. We get to watch to see if this franchise quarterback can really be that franchise quarterback. But it's going to take an element of winning before that bandwagon starts to get full. Well, Do more people get on it? Sure. But to fill it up, it's going to take a while.
Well, it's like the Metro Rail, right? They're going to jump on, but they're going to get off two stops down the road if it turns out that the first year is more like a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance than it is the first year of, you know, say...
People are loving Fields right now.
What's his name in New England?
Mac Jones.
You know, if your franchise quarterback plays like Mac Jones in the first year, well, now people are going to stay on that train because they believe that that's just the start of something.
See, that's more element of winning, though, because like Mac Jones didn't really tear it up as a rookie; he was just winning football games.
But I want to say he made the pro. But
he did. He was like the 18th alternate.
I get that, but he made plays enough that his team won. They made the playoffs. He did things to help them win, and that's what's going to keep people invested in that product. If he sucks, they're going to be like, oh, man, they're still a ways away. I don't know about this. And a lot of people are going to jump back off and say, I'll jump back on at the appropriate time. But yet that initial jumping on again is going to be, we had the number one pick in the draft, or we got the number one quarterback in the draft, and it's going to fire people up to have enough interest to want to jump back in.
The franchise quarterback's the biggest deal. But, I mean, the biggest player that you can acquire. The winning is going to take, like, the full turnaround. But even, like, if you go like franchise defensive end, like that's not going to matter as much as the franchise quarterback because of what that quarterback position symbolizes in the NFL. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. The Texans are at the midway point-ish. It's hard to do that with 17 or 18 weeks now in the NFL season. I guess they are at the midway point. Let's clean up all of the Texans trash from the first half. Straight Trash, homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Well, baseball season is over. College basketball season started last night. NBA's been going on for about a dozen games as well. So tis the season for a little bit of basketball. And if you're looking for a goal, you're in the market for one, how about you try Produnk Hoops? It's the best basketball goal on the market, guaranteed. Tempered glass backboard gives you a true, authentic feel. Extended overhang, which keeps a clear path under the rim. Don't have to worry about rolling your ankles. Don't have to worry about your kids rolling their ankles. And also, competition-grade breakaway rim, perfect for dunking, hanging, keeping you safe. Why are we bringing up dunking? Because you can lower these goals. They're adjustable for every part of the game. You want to throw down some jams? You can lower it all the way down to 5 feet, raise it all the way up to 10, anywhere in between, and work on that slam dunk contest. Or raise it up to regulation, work on that shot as well. Durability is a strength of ProDunk Hoops. Stainless steel fasteners, thicker steel, exclusive rust armor, which makes them sturdy and strong. My favorite feature, maybe the best feature, maybe your favorite feature, they will install the goal. You can't screw it up because the pros at ProDunk Hoops will professionally install it. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros at ProDunk Hoops do all of the work for you. ProDunk Hoops goals come in a variety of sizes and options. They'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
ESPN 97.5 is your home for Texas A&M Athletics. Catch all the football and basketball action right here as the Aggies make their way through the SEC. Only on ESPN 97.5. Giga Mags.
Clean up on all five.
Now that this week's game is in the books, let's do some cleaning up.
I want you to clean it up.
I want to rest.
Clean it up.
It's straight trash, homie, with the Killer Bees. Brought to you by Bavia Dumpster Rentals.
Let's clean up the Texans trash through the first half-ish of the year for the Houston Texans. We might be here for the rest of the show. Straight Trash Homie presented by Bavia Dumpster Rentals. You want to kick us off? Football pun there?
Look, I'm not going to say beat a dead horse, but he's not dead. He's just, to me, at the midway point or close to it and looking at this team, you don't have a very good quarterback. And Davis Mills is not the guy that everybody was hoping he was going to be. And even the biggest Mills Mafia, member was basically coming back to reality with each and every week in these first couple weeks of the season. And you know, they could fight tooth and nail, but they just were having less and less that they could hang their hat on in terms of a guy that can actually orchestrate drives and do the things we said was necessary for a quarterback with this team this year to do. And it's unfortunate because when you take a guy in the third round and you think with his salary and the fact that so many people said he had so much ability that you were hoping that this guy could be the leader of this football team for the foreseeable future. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be out of the league. I'm not saying he's not going to be a backup. I'm not saying on certain teams at certain times he might end up being a spotlight starter. But I think that there's enough of a sample size where when you look at it, you realize he ain't the guy. And he's not the guy here to be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans.
Fewer and fewer people believe that than at the start of the year, where there was optimism that not only was Davis Mills going to, again, buy a year, but the Texans could like find themselves playing meaningful games in December, like 7 wins, 8 wins. That is not materialized. That has not been the case for a variety of reasons, not just Davis Mills. I would say across the board, and some that we're going to get to here in Straight Trash Homie, presented by Bavia Dumpster Rentals, that are part of the problem as well. So there are fewer and fewer Davis Mills truthers out there and Mills Mafia members out there. It still exists, though.
I had somebody
come at me the other day and say, why would you draft the franchise quarterback with the number one pick? The quarterback position isn't even the biggest need for the Houston Texans. You could sell me on that. You could say that the linebacking core needs more help than the quarterback position. You could tell me that the Texans, like Davis Mills, is a better starting quarterback in the NFL than Quisenberry is at center. Okay, I'll believe that. You could say that, you know, they need more help at Roy Lopez's spot as a defensive tackle than they do at Davis Mills' spot at the quarterback. Okay, I can understand that. But the difference between quarterback, center, defensive tackle, wide receiver number one, tight end, nickel, corner, whatever, is the quarterback is the most important position in all of sports, equal to the number one player on a basketball team in the NBA. Like, you got to find that guy. Davis Mills might not be the worst position player that you're starting each and every week, but he's at the most desired position to fix in the NFL, because if you have that quarterback, you always think you're going to be a contender despite everything else that is around you.
No question about it. And I think that's a tough pill to swallow for all these people that you know got on the Mills Mafia train early and decided that they had a violin case with loaded ammunition ready to go at anybody that didn't go with them and say that Mills was the man. So I think that it's a tough reality to have to face, but I think that the more you see this team play and see his play at the quarterback position, you know, you're getting more people to come over to our side and say that, hey, look, you know what? It's the over the Mills gang, and we're not happy about it, but the tape says who he is.
KD Burnerphone kind of brings up mine in an indirect way. Take out the trash of getting millions of dollars to these athletes that decide I don't want to play, which has been a pretty big deal in the city of Houston, whether it's Deshaun Watson, whether it's John Wall, James Harden. Last week, it was Brandon Cooks, who Nick Caserio gave a contract extension to, which you can go back to that contract extension, hindsight 2020, we know, and give grief to Nick Caserio with that. I think there's two areas where you can criticize Nick Caserio with this Brandon Cooks situation. One is the contract, because the contract made him, I think, untradeable to the rest of the NFL. Secondly, the demand. Asking for a second and a fourth rounder for Brandon Cooks, knowing the, you know, handicap of his contract to what it would mean for the rest of the NFL, Nick Caserio overshot it there. But Brandon Cooks also belongs in Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals. We talked about this for the last few weeks, that Brandon Cooks has every look of a guy who is quitting on his team. And then what did he do Thursday night? He quit on his team. He didn't show up despite signing the contract extension. We've heard for years that Brandon Cooks is this professional. He told me Thursday everything I need to know about Brandon Cooks.
You beat me to it. He was on my list, too. Like, you know, this organization has bent over backwards. And a lot of it was led by Easterby about this guy being a culture guy, about this guy being so underrated. And you know, if given the right opportunity, he could be a leader. He could be this. He could be that. Even before the season, people anointing him as an underrated wide receiver, one that, you know, was going to be so good. But you go back and see constantly over and over again another situation like you mentioned. The organization bends over backwards, is willing to overpay and overplay and over, you know, defend a guy that when given the right opportunity, he turns around and starts saying, I'm not going to deal with this anymore. You didn't do what I wanted you to do. You're not going to send me where I want to go. You don't want to cut me loose so I can pick my next team. Well, when one side shows loyalty and the other side shows disrespect, put him in that same category as Deshaun and James and John Wall and all those other guys and say, you know what? That's why I kept saying addition by subtraction. Suspend him now. Show them what it's like when you don't have a paycheck because of the way you've acted. It's tough because you have to pay them next year too, and there's a tough decision that's going to have to be made the longer this draws out. But be a real man that honors your contract and does what you're supposed to do. Live up to your end of the bargain.
I'd suspend him this week. I'm the one making the decisions around here, not you, Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks decides he was going to leave his team for a game. Well, I'm going to decide that I'm leaving Brandon Cooks for a game. I think it sends a bad message to the rest of the locker room, well, if you don't.
And it's a distraction because what was the number one question that Tunsil and all these guys had to answer after the game? It wasn't about the game itself and staying competitive with an undefeated Philadelphia team. It was, will you open arms accept Brandon Cooks back? Do you want him back in this locker room? They don't need all that. They just played their asses off, and they played. They were willing to play for the Houston Texans.
8924, y'all should get the Texans to sponsor the trash segment. We don't need that. We got a better sponsor, Vivia Dumpster Rentals, Straight Trash Homie. I think this text from 2662 belongs in Straight Trash Homie. Not a Mills truther, but I still think he performed better with a better supporting cast. Cool. I would perform better with the Texans if they had a better supporting cast. Bryce Young would perform better with the Texans if he had a better supporting cast. Yes, a quarterback would perform better with a better supporting cast. But Davis Mills is not the answer at starting quarterback if Jerry Rice is to his left and Randy Moss is to his right.
And a tight end. You name Gronk. Put Gronk in there. I mean, I just, again, to your point, they exist. They're still out there. The Mills Mafia is still going down fighting. They're going to be in that foxhole until the bitter end, and they're going to be, you know, shooting every last shot, trying to hang on for dear life that something's going to happen that's going to suddenly anoint Davis Mills as a star. It's not happening, people. The fact that you have a weapon behind you that's the best offensive, maybe the best player on the team.
Pierce.
Yeah, in Pierce. And he helps you by giving you the running game you didn't have a year ago.
Yeah.
And that doesn't help you when it's time to throw the football, not make the wrong read, not hang on to the ball too long, not throw the ball where it isn't supposed to be thrown. So, you know what? You have talent around you. Is it not all pro talent? Okay, I'll give you that. Mm. But you still have more talent you had a year ago, and you have enough talent where if you're a decent quarterback, you can move the football down the field and put points on the board.
It's far from only Mills. Like, we understand the talent level, especially at the skill positions, not great outside of Damian Pierce. Cooks is having one of his worst year in years. And Nico Collins been out for a game. And look, he's still a very young player. Offensive line, three-fifths of it's pretty good, I think has a future. Pep Hamilton's a bad OC. So, like, it's more than Davis. But I think you can also be realistic about Davis. Lamont brings up a pretty good one for Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals. This is one that people might not be ready to have this conversation if we're being completely honest, but hey, that's what we do here at the Killer Bees. Straight Trash, Lovie Smith's son, the linebacker coach. This defense has been putrid for the last 2 years. Last year, they were the second-to-worst defense in the NFL. I haven't looked at this week's numbers because I've been busy with the Astros, but I think they're 31st in the NFL. Maybe I'm off by a ranking or two. The linebackers especially, though, are pretty bad. Defensive line's not great either, but the linebackers especially have been brutal. Christian Harris hasn't played the whole year, rookie that's starting to play games. But the linebackers, like, on top of the fact that they don't have a lot of skill, like, it's not a great position that has a lot of talent. How many missed tackles are these dudes making, too? How about the fact that they're nowhere in sight of ball carriers? The linebacking crew, I think, is the worst core on this defense. I think the secondary's got a chance to be pretty good. The defensive line, whatever. John Grenard's been hurt. Malik Collins has been hurt. That hurts you. Jerry Hughes has been okay. Addison's been okay. The linebacking core is putrid. And it's Lovie Smith's son that coaches up the linebackers.
There's no doubt about it. And it's both of them. And the fact that is, when you're the head coach and your son, unless you're Belichick and your son is a mullet-wearing, dip-spitting, you know.
A dip,
you know,
what?
Dip-spitting. Because he always has that dip in his mouth while he is, you know, again, working for his dad. When you're the greatest coach of all time, you can do that. When you're Lovie Smith and you anoint your son to coach the linebackers and you're coaching the defense and the defense sucks and every running team that has a running game is licking their chops when they see you on the schedule, it's not too good. It's not a good look. It's definitely dumpster worthy, and it's something that's going to look bad at Lovie Smith at the end of the year. Will people say that he should? Maybe Cal should say, hey, you should hire a defensive coordinator. Well, don't hire your son. Don't give that job to him. And I don't think Lovie Smith wants to give up calling the defensive plays.
713-780-ESPN, Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals. All right, we're finally getting a head coach in the NFL who has zero coaching experience above the high school level. If it works there, can it work here? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, we'll tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Look, Doc Linville is a game changer, and he is going to be someone that everybody should want to see because he can get you your hair back. If you're a dude and you look in the mirror and you're like, man, I mean, I used to have a full head of hair. Now I've got thinning or I've got bald spots. My forehead has turned into an 8-head. There's nothing I can do about it. You know, do I need those sprays and creams and foams? Do I need something to mask the problem, or do I just shave my head? There's another possible solution, and it's going to work. It's called the Neograft procedure. Doc Linville, in my opinion, is the best in the business at doing it. He does it here in Houston, Texas. For you at ESPN that are ESPN listeners, you can get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff to see if it's right for you. It normally costs $150. It costs you absolutely nothing. Just explore the possibilities. See if it could possibly be something that could be an answer for what you have in terms of your problems and questions with your hairline. It's a real simple process. It's essentially taking hair where you're never going to lose it. Genetically, Doc explained it to me. You're never going to lose. Even guys that are bald, if they wanted to, if they let their hair grow, they would have it on the sides and the back. It's never going away. Well, they take every third or fourth follicle of all that hair you're always going to have. They move it where you need it, whether it's the baboon's butt on the top or the 8-head in the front. They can get your old hairline back. They can take care of business. And the hair that is transplanted, it stays. It grows. The success rate, 95%+ of all the follicles moved actually stay there and grow, and it's going to be there for the long haul. That's what got me and swayed me and convinced me. There may be other things that convince you, but it's worth looking into because it's absolutely free. Go to 975hair.com, 975hair.com. Sign up for that free consultation. Ask all your questions. Find out all the answers. See if it's right for you. It was right for me and Granato, Jake Asman, Fred Fowler, so many more. You could be next in line. Tell them I sent you by. I could not be happier with the Neograft procedure. It's Doc Linville, 975hair.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Howard Balzer is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. Can't wait to talk to Balzer about what the Colts have been doing. All right, so the Colts fired Frank Reich yesterday, which, not a surprise. I mean, Ursay was telling them to bench Matt Ryan playing Sam Ehlinger. They fired their offensive coordinator 2 weeks ago. Then their offense was putrid against, that's my favorite word today. They were awful against the Patriots. So then they fired Frank Reich. It's an organization that has not been playing very well. Jonathan Taylor is their best player. He's been hurt too. So it hasn't been like this ideal situation. They've also had a mass exodus of pretty good coaches over the years. Nick Sirianni, who was the offensive coordinator once upon a time for the Colts, doing pretty good things in Philadelphia. Yeah. Matt Eberflus, who was the defensive coordinator with the Colts for a while. Texans kind of wanted Matt Eberflus once upon a time. He's doing a heck of a job in Chicago. If that team's winning games, Eberflus is doing really good. And I saw some signs of that, too, whenever they played the Texans. Like, they weren't throwing the ball a lot, but they were scheming up a running game that was doing some good things. Now, that was against the Texans' rush defense, but they've continued that against other opponents. I think that they've lost two really good coordinators. But the shocking news that came out yesterday is that they've hired Jeff Saturday to be their interim head coach. And a lot of people are angry at this. How could you disrespect everybody on that Indianapolis Colts staff, which I find to be ridiculous? That entire staff is about to be fired at the end of the year. They've already fired the head coach. They already fired the offensive coordinator. It's a lame duck coaching staff to begin with. Secondly, this is all reward and no risk. There is zero risk hiring Jeff Saturday. Why? Because if you're firing a coach mid-year for a very bad team, you're cleaning staff. You're cleaning the whole staff out anyways at the end of the year. But what if Jeff Saturday somehow gets this team to the playoffs? All of a sudden, it's like, wow, what a genius move by Jim Irsay, who would never say that about Jim Irsay. This is a move that's all reward and zero risk. I'm actually a fan of what Jim Irsay did.
It'd be great if they had all their draft picks left so that they could embrace the suck, and then they could actually capitalize on if Saturday doesn't do well.
Do they not have their picks?
I mean, think about all that they've given away for quarterbacks.
The mid-rounders. I don't think they've given away. They haven't given away a first-rounder.
I don't know what they have left, but it would be nice if they had their full complement because of the fact that they're heading down that path. But when you look at it, this could be, I think a lot of teams in the league are going to watch this, including the Texans, and we went through this already with what it meant when they were thinking about hiring Josh McCown. But when you look at what is going on right now with the Colts, a lot of teams are going to say, is this the version of the NBA hiring ex-point guards with no coaching experience and being able to coach a team right away and do good things? It's amazing that Jeff Saturday is leaving the ESPN booth, and yes, he had a title of a consultant with the Colts, but that's just taking care of one of the all-time best in Colts history in terms of players, ex-players. But to take him from the ESPN booth and put him on the sidelines with a headset on as the head coach of an NFL team just in 1 week's time is absolutely amazing to me. I was flabbergasted. I thought it was a joke in a burner account when we started seeing it on Twitter. And now I'm really curious to see how this all plays out. Because as you mentioned, to fire the offensive coordinator the week before and then get rid of Frank Reich, they literally have no one on their coaching staff that has ever called an offensive game in the history of the NFL on their staff. What the hell are they going to do?
Yeah, they haven't announced who's going to call plays yet. I've seen Ballard talk about it. I think yesterday at the press conference, they said they're going to try to make that decision either later that day or today. So, I mean, they're going to figure it out. Now, it's probably not going to be pretty. It's probably going to be ugly.
A committee. It's probably going to take some time to get every play in.
Yep.
You got to know the playbook. That's why you can't. It's not like when, what's his name with the Nathaniel Hackett. When you're coaching the Broncos and you have problems doing the head coaching duties, they bring in someone that's been like the coach in the booth assisting the head coach that can help you. But when you can't just bring someone off the street and say, hey, learn our playbook and understand what plays we need to call and call our plays.
I'm sure it'll be like whoever the quarterback coach
receivers coach. It's going to be someone, that's what I mean, already on staff and probably by committee.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you can call plays by committee. Now, you could draw up the playbook by committee, but like during the game, you're going to have...
Well, you're going to script the first however many plays, and then you're going to have meetings all week to say, these are the running plays we're going to lean on, these are the passing plays that we're going to lean on, and then leave it up to one guy. But I think the committee is going to have a whole... They have to, because they're the ones that know the system.
But you're not going to have a committee calling the plays.
No, on Sunday.
During the game,
saying,
yeah. But building the
Sunday,
building
the
game plan.
The quarterback's coach is probably going to be the one pulling the trigger play by play
right.
In each possession.
Here was Irsay when he whenever they introduced Jeff Saturday, because I understand the craziness of this. I understand it's wacky. I understand that it's mad. But sometimes there's a method to the madness, a madness to the method, where it could work out. And look, there's no risk. It's all reward, because if you're firing a coach in the middle of the season, you've pretty much given up on the year anyways. But here's Irsay yesterday at the press conference. The decision to go with Jeff Saturday as their head coach.
I don't know how to make sausage. I don't know what goes into sausage. But I do know how to build a football team.
There you go. Jim Irsay knows how to build a football team. Here's the question that I have, though. If Jeff Saturday does well, because look, they're not out of this race. Like, if they can get it, now they have Sam Ehlinger at quarterback. The thing that I hate the most about this is that it's the first time in like modern NFL history where a coach has been hired with zero coaching experience above high school. What I hate about this, because I do believe that this could work in the right situation with the right dude. I believe it can work. What I hate about the Colts situation is I don't feel like it is a position that has any chance to succeed. I think it's a position for failure. If Sam Ehlinger is your quarterback, I don't think it's possible that it can go well.
Don't they also have Foles on the roster?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
I'm thinking at a certain point, that's either you want to win or you want to try and make a push for that playoff spot. Because I don't think Sam Ehlinger is the best quarterback on that roster.
But if the owner's
saying
if the owner's going to say play Sam Ehlinger, they're going to play Sam Ehlinger.
Sure, and if that's Irsay's direction, then he also has to be willing to accept the fact that you look like a laughingstock as a franchise and a football team from week to week. Because I don't believe he's ready for prime time. But I believe that thank God the Texans don't have to be the guinea pig now of this experimental. Take a guy that's only coached in high school and see if he can, you know, handle the reins of being an NFL coach because he's played in the league for an extended period of time. Jeff Saturday is a smart football guy. It's funny that on Get Up this morning, they left a chair open for him with a plate of pancakes because they, too, were in complete amazement. This guy was a week away from having been, you know, a consistent NFL analyst on their show, and now suddenly he's going to be roaming the sidelines as the head coach of an NFL team. Everyone is shocked by this. Everyone's watching. At least the Texans aren't the first team to try this,
well,
where they could look like the laughingstock.
I wouldn't. I don't know if I would go that far. For me, I wouldn't have minded if they were the laughingstock, because if you're going to lose every game you play except for one, what's the difference, really? If Jeff Saturday does well, though, could you loosen up on the idea of Josh McCown?
I could, possibly. Yeah. But I think that, look, you're right, though. He's set up to fail. When you don't have a guy that's ever called offensive plays before, you know, in terms of your offense, and you have a guy like Sam Ehlinger quarterbacking your team, I don't know how the hell you're going to be successful. You think the Texans have it bad? Yeah, you could turn around and hand the ball to Jonathan Taylor. You don't think every defensive coordinator playing the Colts knows, well, at least they can turn around and hand the ball off to Jonathan Taylor. We'll load the box up and dare you to beat us.
That's what annoys me more than anything. Because, look, I'm rooting for the Colts the rest of the way, because I've been like the minority opinion actually thinks that this could work in the NFL. We've seen it work in other sports. We've seen it work in the NBA. We've seen it work in Major League Baseball. I think it could work in the NFL. I think if somebody would have hired Bill Belichick before he ever had an ounce of coaching experience, Bill Belichick is good at his job. Bill Belichick would have figured it out. I believe that if anybody hired Nick Saban before he had any sort of coaching experience, Nick Saban is good at his job. Nick Saban would figure it out. I'm not dismissing experience. I do think that it matters, but I think people overrate the experience. Give me an incredible coach before they have any of it. I still think at some point they're going to figure it out. We'll see if this is the case for Jeff Saturday and the Colts. I'm going to be pulling for the Colts the rest of the way. I want Jeff Saturday to lead that team to the playoffs to prove that it can be done. It stinks that Sam Ehlinger is their quarterback. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Thomas. Thomas, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Thomas?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it's a strange situation here in the NFL. But, I mean, if he's going to come here and just manage, they're still going to give the defensive and OC a chance. I guess OC might have been fired recently. But, yeah, I think most recently we saw it here locally this past year with the Houston Dash. They brought an interim, different situation, crappy situation, but they brought in a head coach, interim head coach, led him to the playoffs. I think we've seen it in soccer quite more just because there's so many talented coaches just, you know, sitting on the couch. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And it doesn't change my mind about Jeff McCown. We can't do Jeff McCown.
I don't understand why you would say that, though, Thomas. Thomas, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. And by the way, Soccer Matters, broadcasting live today from 7 to 9 from the Huge O'Connors of the Marquee, I-10 and Silver. Join host Glenn Davis tonight. Huge O'Connors, a great Irish pub. Look, soccer does matter, and I think he brought up a good point.
Talking about the new Houston coach.
Olsen, yeah.
What are the odds that Thomas just wanted to talk soccer?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Because if there's an example in Houston that I'm going to with a coach in his first year that had zero coaching experience, my go-to would be Larry Durker. Larry Durker went straight from the to the dugout from the booth, had zero coaching experience, had a pretty good run with the Killer Bees. 713-780-ESPN.
You know what I think about that? I think it's easier to do in baseball than it is football when you've got coordinators and a ton more coaches. And
I don't know. I don't understand that, though. You don't have a ton more coaches in baseball.
All you got to do is basically, literally, when you talk about it like in basketball, rolling the ball out there,
yeah.
It's not that easy because there's still offense and defense and switches and plays and all that things. In baseball, as a manager, and we talk about the least likely you can affect a game is managing a baseball team.
Yeah.
If you've got great players already still on the roster, you just throw the ball out there and you can make a decision here or there. You're good. When you're talking about the NFL and you're talking about every single play offensively and defensively and challenges.
Yeah, but he's not gonna be calling plays. Like, no, he's just going to be a CEO, leader, coach. You don't think he's capable of doing that, though?
And a hands-on approach. If he's never done it before, I think it's going to be an uphill battle.
What is so tough about managing an NFL game? Like, oh, challenging God. Plays is hard? No, calling timeouts is hard?
Not just that, but the communication and trying to fit...
With who? Who's he communicating with? He's not calling plays. He has zero to do with the offense,
right,
and the defense.
He would be the deciding factor if they were deciding to go for it. They were deciding...
Do you think that's hard to decide to go for it on fourth and one from the 43?
With a clock running on you and things like that, I think it's a lot harder than you're selling it
so.
To be.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Tom Pelissero, by the way, he says that they do have their play caller. Colts interim coach Jeff Saturday expected to have 30-year-old pass game specialist assistant QB coach Parks Frazier serve as the offensive play caller starting Sunday. I'm an Indianapolis Colts fan from here on out. I hope the Colts win the rest of their games. Hope they win out. 713-780-ESPN.
David Culley's the perfect example of a guy that should have been ready to be prepared to be a head coach, and he'd been on staffs for 16 years, and he was overmatched.
I think that's my side of the argument.
Why?
Because he had 16 years of experience and couldn't do it. It doesn't matter the experience. Like, so Brendan might be a genius in terms of clock management.
That's why I think Jeff Saturday is going to have an uphill battle if he thinks he's going to actually come in and be any kind of hands-on or do anything to try and help this team succeed.
But you can make the case.
He can get out of the way.
But every first-year coach is in the first-year game management, right? Every single, like, they've never been the head coach. They've never made trying to go for it on fourth and one. They've never had the game, like, the
right. We saw
challenges,
Nathaniel
things
Hackett
like that.
Just completely pee down his leg the entire
sure,
season.
Sure, but that's one. Like, you can also say Sean McVay. You can also say Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. You can say Kevin O'Connell right now in Minnesota. You can say Nick Sirianni last year in Philadelphia. Like, the first year head coaches have had a good amount of success in the NFL,
but
whereas David Culley,
to
do with two decades of experience, hasn't.
In a coordinator role in big time positions, whereas Culley was just a positional
but that,
coach.
But being a DC or an OC isn't deciding to go for it and has zero to do with clock management.
But you have, once you take the reins, you have to make, you're the guy that has to make those calls.
Agreed. And Culley was bad with 2 years, two decades of experience.
And he had NFL experience. You think that, you know, because Saturday played or McCown played, that they would be better suited?
He's a quarterback, yeah. I think a quarterback would. Do you think Rodgers would be good in those moments? Do you think Peyton Manning would be good in those moments? They were doing it for 15 years. Yeah, I think they'd be good at it.
That's just the offensive side of the ball. But we're talking about challenges. We're talking about a bunch of clock management.
Most of those dude on challenges have people in their ear. 713-780-ESPN. Let's talk to Howard Balzer. He's a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. I cannot wait to hear about Howard Balzer's opinion on this and other things going on around the NFL. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.